Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
Remembering Lacey, how her smile would make you smile. Remembering Lacey, how she loved, there's no denial. Now the angels hold her gently, and little Connor's with her too. And she smiles and says, we're all right, and we send our love to you. So full of life and happiness was pretty Lacey's life. With little Connor on the way, just made things seem so right. Still the two of them together, from the start to heaven's door. And she smiles and says, we love you, to the one she's loved before. The tears that fell made flowers bloom on earth in heaven too. And little Connor runs and picks them. Mama, these for you. Now the angels are preparing special tributes from afar. As you gaze into the heavens, look, the Lacey Connor star. Ooh, remembering Lacey, how her smile would make you smile. Remembering Lacey, how she loved, there's no denial. Now the angels hold her gently, and little Connor's with her too. And she smiles and says, we're all right, and we send our love to you. And we send our love to you. We love you.
Good afternoon to you. It is 12 minutes after the hour of one in this, the month of June, in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, a force with which to be reckoned. Broadcasting from high above the milk packing district in beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, my name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. This is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Amusements and Whimsy. If you'd like to join us today, it's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964, with your comments, questions, clarifications, kvetches, ruminations, ponderings, whatever it is you might have to share with us today, 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Somebody in this room was given a don@rickemerson.com address but has yet to activate it.
Ah,
it's just sitting there waiting to be confirmed.
Waiting
to be used. No, that's okay.
I'll go do it right now.
No, I don't need you to traffic in lies for my sake, Don Taylor. That's fine. No, it's a thing you asked for. It's a thing I provided. You're not going to use it. That's fine. That's okay. I'll just keep that in mind in the future. It's rick@rickemerson.com, or you can chat live if you like. You go to rickemerson.com. And you go to the Rick Emerson Show section there, and there's the chat box that is up and running as we speak. All right, phone activated now. Right. In the chat box, by the way, we had this. I think this was during Friday's show. A series of texts. this show needs a commercial so that I can pee. I don't know, that's a whole thing where like some guys need the faucet to be on or whatever. It's like, I don't know, I just can't whiz without a commercial in the background. It's a whole thing. I'm afraid to go to the bathroom in case I miss something. How much for a two-minute commercial, he continues. I don't even have anything to advertise. I just need a bathroom break. I am willing to pay. Not that I want to turn down your money, sir, and in fact, I won't. I mean, if you got money to spend, we'll work something out. It does seem like maybe this is an issue you ought to be taking up with your physician. I mean, I'm just speculating. I'm going to put that right there. I'm just going to say this before we do anything else. If you saw True Blood last night, holy Jesus, you had not finished the entire thing, right? You had only gotten, I don't know, what you gotten about 2/3 of the way into or something, and then it was just, I don't know if it was too late or you didn't have time to finish it.
Yeah, I didn't have time to finish. I got through the creepy sex scene with Tara and the creepy new vampire.
God, I hate her. That character, the Tara character, just bugs the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Is it wrong that clearly not, because I think you probably are in the same boat here, you like myself. You just every episode you find yourself wishing that she would just perish in some in some sort of unholy fire.
Yeah.
So in any event,
and I'm not sure how much of that is the actress and how much of that is the character.
Yeah.
It seems an unholy combination of both. Just an annoying actress playing an annoying character.
Yeah, every single episode I find myself waiting. Maybe this is the time, because it used to be on television programs that you couldn't necessarily predict who was gonna die and who was gonna, or the, you know, the, in other words, that you it used to be in television programs that you always knew who was gonna die and who was gonna stay there. You know, they were never gonna kill off the main character. They were never gonna come out of the blue and just off somebody unless it was some sort of extraordinary circumstance or a season-ending cliffhanger like a Who Shot JR thing. But now we've reached a time in television where no one really is safe. Where sometimes characters that you thought were going to be impervious can be dispatched with extreme prejudice. And I just, every time she comes on the screen, I keep waiting for this sort of like the Monty Python foot or like an anvil or something just to come out of the sky and get rid of her once and for all. And it continues to not happen. But none of that really matters. Because if you saw last night's episode of True Blood, I mean, it was kind of going along and being its own sort of a thing and, you know, giving you all the sort of titillation that you come to expect from that show where it's equal parts sort of tawdry and ludicrous. And then, look, I don't mean to spoil anything, so I'm not going to get into a whole lot of it here. I'll give you a big warning before we discuss it. They get to the final 90 seconds of last night's episode, and it was just... I was agog. I mean, I just sat there with my mouth open, and I think I actually said out loud, like, to no one last night, because I was sitting in my home office watching it. I think I actually just said aloud to no one, like, what the hell? And then I just sort of stared blankly at the screen for a while. So, in any event.
Yeah, you showed it to me when I came in this morning.
Do you see why I was so intent on you watching it, though?
I started giggling, and then you were like, oh, no, just wait.
Oh, it escalates so unbelievably.
Yeah.
Because Cheryl had told me that. Cheryl's like, you know, if you haven't seen True Blood, she's like, you really got to make sure you watch it before the show on Monday. And I thought, well, I mean, what's this? How interesting could it be? The answer is unbelievably so. So we'll talk about that here in just a bit. There's a few bits of business here before we plunge on ahead. One, due to popular demand, we are now offering gift subscriptions. You are now able to give a gift subscription to this very fine radio program. You know, as of last Monday, the 21st, you are able to subscribe and hear this show no matter where you might go on God's green earth. And more about that in a second, because we've posted some of the smartphone listing instructions. But we had a lot of people saying that they knew somebody who was a fan, or they had somebody who followed the show and wasn't able to get it right now, or somebody that wasn't aware that the show had come back and was available. And they said, how can I give somebody else a subscription? So we went ahead and we built that in, because Rick Emerson cares deeply about each and every one of you on an individual basis in a sort of broad, mass-produced kind of way. So if you go to rickemerson.com now, you are able to give a gift subscription. You just go to Rick Emerson Show, the Rick Emerson Show section of rickemerson.com. Right where it says Listen Live, you will just see the link that says Give a Gift Subscription. You click that, you can sign somebody up for a month, 3 months, for a year, what have you. So a lot of people have been asking about that, so now you can do this. Yet one more way to demonstrate your support of and show your love for this fine broadcast. That is first thing. The second is this. Right after,
right after people asking, how is it that I can give a gift subscription? The other thing that people have asked is, when are you know, how can I get the show on my iPhone or my iPad or my iTouch or my Droid or my BlackBerry or my whatever? And we knew it was possible, but it was just there was so much that came together in the couple of weeks leading up to the launch of the show. We just didn't have time to put everything together with the specificity that we wanted. So we have now gotten those instructions up. If you go to the best place to see it right now is on Facebook. You just go to facebook.com/Rick Emerson, and I do believe it was my I do believe it was the most recent entry. Somebody making a phone call.
Is someone calling something?
I don't know. Is that me? Am I accidentally? Am I calling someone? I'm unclear. I'm not sure. Wait. I believe that's on your computer,
is that
Dawn.
On my computer?
Hold on. Let's see if I can.
Well, what the? Oh,
are you playing a news cut? That's exactly what that is.
I didn't realize that there was a...
All right.
There was.
It's like Tim Riley never left. All right. I have no idea where that sound's coming from, Rick. Meanwhile, there's a huge thing on his window going, sound, sound. All right. People have been asking us, though, since we launched this, how they can listen to the show on their iPhone or their smartphone. Right now, the best way to find out is you go to facebook.com/Rick Emerson, and I think it's the most recent post. But that is up at rickemerson.com as well. You go to rickemerson.com, click on the blog right there on the front page, rickemerson.com, and at the bottom it says click here to read the blog. It is the most recent blog entry. It is step-by-step instructions for listening to this show live or archived. On your iPhone, your iPad, any of your Apple devices, or via your Droid, your BlackBerry, or whatever. So that is at rickemerson.com or facebook.com/rickemerson. That's how you can do that. Let's see. What else? Well, I have some other stuff to get to, but I we'll plunge on into the news here in a second. Except to say we want to thank everybody, I think, on behalf of Greg and Sarah, we want to thank everybody who came out to the listener party, which was on Saturday at the Hawthorne Theater. I mean, and I mean this in the best possible way, but goddamn, that place was packed. I mean, the party started at, I think, 8, and there are already people lining up there at 5:30. So thank God that it actually cooled off a little bit by the time the party started. By the time I got there, I mean, it was just it was a roaring success for those guys. It was just a sweat box, though. I mean, it was just jam-packed. Full of people. So I know that they had a great turnout. Everybody had a good time. We met a ton of listeners there. A lot of people who are listening to the show now who are subscribers to the show. So God bless all of you. So it was a chance to unveil Dawn Taylor to the masses at large as well. So that happened this weekend, and I think that's pretty much it. Except to say this, that if it sounds at some point during the show today like I'm cringing or like I'm wincing in pain every now and again, it's because when I got up this morning, I was still kind of half asleep when I was dressing. So I'm standing in the middle of my bedroom, and I'm putting on my shirt as I'm preparing to leave the house to come here to the studios to provide another day of broadcast excellence. And as I'm putting on the shirt, I just stuck my hand straight up and into the whirling blades of the ceiling fan, which was on which was on high.
Wow.
This morning. And it's one of those things that you normally don't tell anybody about, but we have that kind of relationship here, you and I. So I thought I would just... So whatever it is you do today that maybe is not so bright, or if you injure yourself in some embarrassing or retarded fashion, you just realize that you are, in fact, listening to a man who stuck his hand... And, I mean, you really have to work at that, because the ceiling fan is like 10 feet off the ground. It's not like you can just... I mean, it's almost like you have to jump to do that. I'm not even quite sure how I managed it. But I stuck my hands up, and there's that half second of disconnect where you can't figure out what is going on. It's like, well, I guess I'll put on my shirt. Gah! And I can't quite place where the pain is coming from. And then I look up, and there are just the sort of rotating blades hitting my hand over and over again. So that's me. That's how smart I am. All right, and there you go. Dawn Taylor's working on the following stories today on this Monday afternoon for you on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Former tennis star Jennifer Capriati has been hospitalized in South Florida for an accidental overdose. A suspect has been arrested in the Warm Springs shootout last month. And a lawyer will explain the tasing of an 86-year-old bedridden grandmother.
Do you suppose that's a thing that can actually be explained with any sort of accuracy? Well, I guess we'll find out. All right. Without further ado, at the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor on the Rick Emerson radio program.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
we should probably do the snuff watch right out of the gate so that we make sure we talk about this.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, here is your snuff watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson radio program. Your snuff watch for Monday. This is Don Taylor.
Beloved record industry executive and former manager of Kiss, Bill O'Coin, passed away this morning at age 66.
Really? Oh, that sucks.
He's been battling prostate cancer,
damn,
and he passed away from surgical complications. He's known for masterminding the career of Kiss, as well as Stars.
Stars. They were another band that wore makeup, by the way. Have you ever seen Stars?
No.
Stars, which I believe was with a Z, maybe, before the channel?
With a Z.
They always see this whole thing of like, all right, I got these guys, Kiss. It's four guys from Brooklyn. They wear makeup. Here's my next project. They're these guys, Stars. They're these four guys from Brooklyn. They wear makeup. And it was more or less, it was like exactly the same thing. I think it was like more of a New York Dolls style band where they were, it was a little, I think they were spending a little poppier, maybe a little more disco, but it was effectively just the, but I mean, that's the thing where you just, as Paul Stanley would say, you just trip and you fall into a stream of gold. There's no recreating that. But I mean, but for that alone, I mean, the guy brought us, he brought us Kiss. I mean, it's, you know.
And Toby Bow.
Toby Bow.
Billy Squire, Billy Idol.
I had no idea he was responsible for Billy Squire.
And in the last 3 years, he has still been developing bands in the U.S. and around the world.
Bill O'Coin. Yeah, if you go back and you look at any of the early Kiss albums, they all say like a coin management on the front. And so, and I mean, and you really got to hand it to that guy for, I mean, it seems obvious now. When you look back, it seems obvious to say, well, of course, Kiss, they were going to be huge. They were going to be, you know, but they got turned down by every, it's this, you know, the same old story you hear a million times. They got turned by every record label in the country. Everybody told them they sucked, that they were awful, that they were never, they, you know, you got to lose the makeup. It's going to turn off the chicks. And everybody told them that they had to change their act. They weren't going to be able to do the fire breathing and the spitting blood and whatever because nobody, the kids will never go for it. And they put out, I think, three studio records, all of which bombed horribly. I mean, there's sort of a band that would never, ever get a chance today because they put out Kiss, then they put out Hotter Than Hell, then they put out Dressed to Kill, all three of which failed. And so in typical, this is like classic Kiss bravado, though, where they put out three studio records in a row that sold like nothing. I mean, they couldn't give these records away. And then finally somebody, and Gene, of course, always claims that it's him because that's what he does, but who knows. But Bill O'Coin was certainly a part of it. Their manager said, well, then what we're going to do is we're going to put out a double live album. And a double live, you can't sell any records. No one knows who you are. And he thought, well, put out a double live album. And of course, that was improbably enough the thing that was the huge breakout success. There is a, if you want to know more about, I sound like reading Rainbow. If you'd like to know more about the history of Kiss, though, and especially the management side of Kiss, which is fascinating, and even if you don't identify as a Kiss fan, you know, even if you don't give a rodent's rump about their music, there's a great book by a guy named C.K. Lent, L-E-N-D-T. The book is called Kiss and Sell. Kiss and Sell, The Making of a Supergroup, which is really, really a great book. And I strongly recommend that not only to all Kiss fans, but to anybody who likes, who is fascinated by how the music industry works. Kiss and Sell. So Bill O'Coin, there you go.
Bill O'Coin died at 66. He leaves behind his boyfriend of 15 years, Roman Fernandez, and his two sisters, Betty Britton and Janet Benkowski.
Okay, first of all, Roman Fernandez is exactly the name of the boyfriend I'm going to get when I'm a rich and powerful record executive. And all he's going to do is just sit and towel me all day long. That's it. And then fetch me guava. And then his sisters are Betty Brittany Benengadabe?
Betty Britton.
Betty Britton is one person.
And Janet Benkowski.
Janet Benkowski. All right, so there you go. Kiss manager Bill O'Coin, dead, freaking dead. There's your snuff watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Radio program. Fantabulous. All right, here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Former tennis star Jennifer Capriati is recuperating at an undisclosed South Florida hospital after an accidental overdose of medication prescribed by her personal doctor, a family representative said Monday.
No one ever believes this. There's look, I don't want to get us right back into another discussion about drugs, but let's get back into another discussion about drugs, because my thing is, Well, there's no such thing as an accidental overdose, unless, in my opinion, this is just me, I'm not a doctor, you understand, but in my constitutionally protected opinion, there is no such thing as an accidental overdose unless you're already taking too much of the drug to begin with. Because the line between the recommended dosage and the overdosage is like massive, especially when you consider the fact that the doctors, and I think this is well established, doctors figure out whatever the maximum safe dosage is, like however much you could take without killing yourself. And then they prescribe like a third of that. In other words, they give themselves a lot of breathing room because they don't want their patients just offing themselves by the score. So if you're somehow overdosing, it means that you're already just ingesting the stuff at a much, much higher rate than you're probably supposed to be.
Yeah, the only time I can actually ever buy it is in the case of someone like Heath Ledger or something where you're like sick and you're taking four different things and they might counteract each other and then you just fall face down in the bed and suffocate yourself because you're on too many different things at the same time. But just, an overdose of something that's been prescribed on top of everything
else. Did
you
say what it was?
I don't believe so. No.
I'm more suspicious.
TMZ reported Sunday night the paramedics rushed Capriati, 34, to a local hospital that morning after receiving a call from a Riviera Beach hotel about a possible overdose. The celebrity website said it spoke with Capriati's father, who said his daughter was recovering but did not provide any other details.
Doesn't it go without saying that the paramedics rush you to the hospital? Do we really have to note that at this point?
It's not
like the paramedics are ever going to go, I don't know, let's stop at stopping at a double with cheese. I got nowhere to be.
This one's not so important. Turn off the siren.
Yeah, no, I got nothing. Hey, did you ever do this? And I know you have. Did you ever, you're walking down the street and then as you are going down the street, to the hardcore beat while your JVC vibrates the car seat, you see an ambulance going down the street and then it turns off its lights and it's, you know, it's sort of, you know, siren off. And then you think, okay then, you know, that's one ambulance that no longer has to rush to get anywhere. Here's the other thing I think about.
I just assume that they were on their way to lunch and didn't want to have to wait at any of the lights.
I can tell
you. And so they've just been running the siren.
This is one of the reasons why I'm glad that I'm not a cop, by the way, because I would abuse my authority. I mean, I abuse the minuscule amount of authority I have now, and I have no authority. You know, the only authority I have now is I'm going to give your $6.99 back then. You can't listen. I'm not going to let you. That's it. That's the extent of my authority, is to return someone $7. If I was a cop, I would be going through lights just higgledy-piggledy, hither and yon, with the light on. Doesn't matter. If I had to get my car washed, lights on. But do you ever have this fear that you are going to be in an ambulance and the paramedics are, you know, doing that thing where they don't let the bastard win, clear, you know, and they're trying to save your life. But then you're stuck in traffic because every time I'm in Manhattan, which is not all that often, but anytime I've ever been like in Manhattan or San Francisco or God forbid, L.A., which is just that's the worst place to die anyway. But you just see these ambulances on the highway and they can't move because there's just immobile traffic and they're just stuck in a river of steel and there's no getting anywhere. And you think in that in that ambulance is some poor bastard that just needs to get to the hospital to get like a dose of whatever, you know, and then he's just, you know, he's stuck between a bunch of Impalas and he's just not getting anywhere. So that's a bad way to go. All right.
I don't know how ambulances or police cars actually get anywhere in New York City proper.
No. Doesn't make any sense. I have no idea how that works.
And yet you see a high speed.
Sorry, that was me. Sorry.
You apologize. See high-speed car chases in movies and television shows.
Let me just apologize to everybody. I just devin with that. I hit the squeal button.
That hurt.
Yeah, it's right next to the button. It's right next to the suck button. And so I'm always bumping one of those with my
Be a squeal button? Why would you make one of those?
Nah, it's just to keep life interesting, Dawn. All right. It is 503-505-6964. This is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
This is an update on one of my favorite stories from while you were away. If only because of the name of the man in question. A Warm Springs tribal member has been arrested more than a month after he allegedly fired gunshots at police officers, sparking a manhunt on the reservation. Waylon Weaselhead, 21, was arrested Friday after an officer tried to pull a car over for speeding, Warm Springs police said. The driver stopped, let a man out, and sped off. The officer pursuing the car recognized Weaselhead standing by the side of the road and took him into custody.
Recognizing Weaselhead, a Gus Van Sant film.
Weaselhead had a .45 caliber semi-automatic pistol on him, police said. He was arrested on a local warrant and charged with carrying a weapon while prohibited from doing so. I don't know why he did what he did. I honestly don't, said Lieutenant Dennis White III. There's a sense of relief for the community and for the officers as well.
Realize I'm not really listening to any of the facts in the story. I'm just listening to the fact that the guy was named Waylon Weaselhead.
Yes.
If you quizzed me right now to what the guy was arrested for or what he was charged with, all I know is that there was Waylon, there was Weaselhead, they were the same person, and he had a gun. And that's it. That's the extent of my knowledge.
Well, it started on May 20th after several shots were fired from an SUV that a police officer tried to stop. One round struck the patrol car's front windshield, but the officer wasn't hurt. The chase continued for several miles on a dirt road until the men stopped the car and ran. While fleeing, one man fired several shots at the officers. One officer returned fire. The law enforcement agencies spent the next day searching an area of the Warm Springs Reservation. 9 homes were evacuated during the search, but they didn't come up with anything. Waylon Weaselhead was identified as a person of interest, and investigators are still looking for a second suspect.
He's a person of interest to me, and I don't know anything about him. I so desperately wish that he was the latest in a long line of Weaselheads, though, because being Waylon Weaselhead the 5th, you know, or the 9th or the 3rd or something would just be fantastic. Excellent. These are the sorts of stories that I live for, honestly and truly. I really, really do. Here is Don Taylor.
Portland Fire and Rescue said cigarettes were to blame for starting a fire at a historic Portland apartment building Sunday morning. Crews arrived at the building on Northwest Flanders Street around 7:30 a.m. to find flames shooting up from the 3rd floor. They immediately began fighting the fire, but said their efforts were difficult because of electrical wires out of the front of the building. People living there said they were jolted awake by exploding glass and lots of smoke, but everyone managed to get out in time and no one was hurt. Firefighters said most of the damage was confined to the porch. 18 people were displaced by the fire, but at least one resident said things could have been worse. We can be thankful nobody was hurt, said Brianna Wall, whose apartment was destroyed. And really, it's hard to say. We lost all that stuff, but at the end of the day, we're all okay. So that's the biggest deal.
All right. There you go. The common man, ladies and gentlemen.
The blaze caused more than $400,000 in damage. This was another one of those statements that just brings me up short, by the way, when I'm reading it, where they say that, you know, the firemen immediately began fighting the fire.
As opposed to just sort of going, well, I don't know. Do you want to roll for it? Maybe odds or evens. Come on.
Maybe it'll just burn itself out. We won't have to do anything.
Let's just watch for a while. Isn't it pretty? So I've got some of this Al Gore sound. We should probably get to this.
Oh, yes.
It's the biggest story. I mean, this is one of those things where it was just the biggest story because we sort of said it was. You just, no, it's a huge story. And then it was on the front of the Oregonian. Is it the Oregonian that had the story and then didn't publish it, or is it...
It was the Tribune.
By the way, we should note, speaking of the Oregonian, who are apparently blameless in this matter, Christy Turnquist from the Oregonian will be joining us tomorrow right here on the Rick Emerson radio program. Coming up later on in the week... I'm failing so badly. Who's going to be here on Thursday?
Is that Carl Click?
No, he's going to be here on Friday. On Thursday. Dan Hanico from Powell's Books, I believe, talking about what you ought to be reading this summer. Tomorrow, Christy Turnquist from the Oregonian. I believe Wednesday or Thursday, Dan Hanico from Powell's Books. Friday, Carl Click from K2 will be joining us. So it's an action-packed week already. Coming up later on today, Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. And another installment of Pop Culture Authority, our True Blood recap, and Taser Watch all on the way. That's all coming up. And never mind. I'm just getting ahead of myself. But we got to get to this Al Gore thing. This morning, I woke up, and the most glorious thing had happened, which is that somebody had put up all, I think, 3 hours of the interview with this woman who accused Al Gore of getting his grope on with her. So we played some of these already. If you heard us during Legion of News, which happens noon to 1 on PDX.fm, you may have heard these. If not, I am proud to be the one inflicting them upon your ears. Now, the woman's name is never revealed here, which is the thing we'll talk about here in a second, because Don Taylor expressed a slice of editorial opinion about this during the Legion of News segment, and we'll get back to that in a moment. But so the long and the short of it, correct me if I'm missing something here. So the woman claims that in 2006, when he was here stumping for
Kulongowski,
I shouldn't say. I will say that I know someone who works for Kulongowski, and so I had heard and this person had made a little offhand comment to me right before the Gore story broke publicly, and I think he thought it was already out because he said, "Hey, so how about that massage, huh?" Wah, wah. And I thought, "Wow, I have no idea what you're talking about." So I'm going to pretend I didn't get this email. But it turns out that this is what he was referring to. So I guess the folks in Kulongowski's camp must have known. They must have heard, you know, he must have leaked a little bit, you know, before the story sort of broke.
Well, also, Gore just announced recently that he and his wife were divorcing as well. So you wonder how much this has to do with that.
I thought about that this morning, actually, and I found myself wondering if they were, in fact, related. And the thing is, I honestly don't know. Because it just, the whole thing just sounds so fishy that you got to figure that, you know, if it is related, and this is just my speculation, I don't really know, you understand, but if it is related, it seems like it might be related only in the sense that Tipper Gore just figures, F this, he's not going to be president, you know, so there's no point in me, like, why am I even going through all of this crap? Like, what is the, you know, what do I even have to gain by subjecting myself to all of this garbage, because he's not going to get elected. So it's like the demonstrable downside, you know, is much.
I'm
sorry. That's this animation of the event that I'm going to be putting up my website in here in a second. But she must figure that the downside of the whole being caught in the scandal is so much worse than the upside is good, because the upside now is limited, because he's not going to run for anything anymore. He's done. So anyway. So I don't know if those are related or not. In just a few minutes, I will put up on my website this fantastic Japanese computer animation of the alleged Al Gore incident, by the way, which you saw a little bit of,
yes.
Dom. So this is the alleged victim talking to the man, describing the encounter with Al Gore. I've got a few cuts of this, and then we'll just play a big chunk of it. This is, this is cut number one, where she talks about him getting, quote, frisky.
He then forced an open mouth kiss on me, who was cornered by him, sticking his tongue into my.
Sorry, I hate to go back to this again, but he forced an open mouth kiss on me by him, who was cornered then by her, and that. It's like she's got some sort of Berlitz textbook that's been cut up into small pieces in front of her, and she's just making it into a Burroughs word salad.
He then forced an open mouth kiss on me, who was cornered by him, sticking his tongue into my mouth to French kiss me. I pushed back and said, stop it, you're being way too frisky.
It's like something out of James Joyce.
And I think that saying, stop it, you're being way too frisky, I think that would sort of maybe undersell the seriousness of the alleged incident. Like, wouldn't you just say, like cut the crap, you know? Like, knock it off, I swear to God I'll punch you right in the junk. Or, you know, I don't know, leave? I mean, presumably the room had a door, right? It's not like you were inside. This isn't like The Cube or something where you're just locked inside. You know, you're locked inside, like, say, some sort of a, like, locked in a Skinner box or something. So this is the second cut where she talks about Al Gore and his inescapable embrace.
Well, I was trying to pack up, and then he wrapped me in an inescapable embrace as I turned around, giving this come hither look deep into my eyes and caressed my back and buttocks and breasts.
I got like three thoughts on this. First of all, inescapable embrace, it sounds like it would be some sort of new R&B single that he would be releasing with like Kesha or somebody. Secondly, is it just me, or about halfway through this cut, does this woman, whoever she might be, begin to sound like television sitcom actress Brett Butler? Sort of a, and then he was, you know, like you just expect to hear like a cowbell or something ringing in the background as she sort of ambles toward the microphone.
Well, I was trying to pack up, and then he wrapped me in an inescapable embrace as I turned around, giving this come hither look deep into my eyes and caress my back and buttocks and breasts.
See, at this point, this would be where I would be leaving. I mean, if this were true. Also, this is just my observation.
Well, if the embrace is truly inescapable, Rick Emerson, you're not going anywhere. That's what inescapable means.
It was the Kobayashi Maru of sexual harassments. I'm sorry, it was all a test. There was no way out of his inescapable embrace. Damn you! I'll play this final cut here, and then we'll talk about it a bit. By the way, our telephone number, if you'd like to join us today, is 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. 6964, or you can email it rick@rickemerson.com. All right, this is the final. This is where she talks about his robe and whether or not it was open.
I was distressed, shocked, and terrified. He laughed, clearly enjoying himself at the expense of my discomfort, refusal, and fear. This was ever more disturbing and frightening to me as I saw he was determined to have a sexual act with me. At this time, he had been pressing his body up against mine, holding me tightly. And I was not certain if his robe was open or closed in the front. It seemed partway open, like the robes are small. He's rotund, you know. And I did not want to look down to see. I could feel what seemed to be an erection from him, lest he be further encouraged and aroused by seeing me look down. And I did not want to look anyway as he repulsed me.
There's so many things about this story that are awesome. The first one, and I'll just go through them in no particular order, just the way they appear on the silver screen of my mind. The first is how she makes him sound like Mason Verger or whatever his name is from Hannibal, where, you know, he's, you know, oh, your sweet tears arouse Al Gore. Cry some more for me, my precious. The second is that she says she felt what, quote, appeared to be an erection. Now, I don't know what other... I'm not saying he had an erection or not. Clearly, I wasn't there. And she seems even a little fuzzy on the whole thing, which means either she has no experience with actual erections or he's bionic in some way and has like a Swiss Army thigh. Because I'm not really sure what else he would be feeling down
there. If they were wrestling, maybe he just had very bony knees.
No, but he's, well... Well, I suppose, and I guess it all depends on how generous the good Lord was to Al Gore, whether or not that would be at knee level.
Again, she's obviously been coached by lawyers or whoever, and so
it
may have come up at some point where they say, "Well, are you sure it was an erection?" And she's like, "Well, I didn't look down and see it." And, well, then say that it appeared to be. It's like, you thought maybe it was an erection. It seemed to be an erection.
Based on my significant experience with feeling erections pointed at my knee, that's what it felt like.
My problem is when she says that she was feeling ever more worried or whatever it was. No one says that.
Yeah.
No one actually says that.
Well, and so my thing is, and the cut that I have not been able to locate, because again, this entire interview is like, it's like 3 hours long. I'm trying to figure out where it is that she describes him as being a sex poodle. Because
a crazed sex poodle.
Because that phrase doesn't sound at all like it comes from the same woman that this all comes from. Like, this sounds, this is just my constitutionally protected opinion. This is just me as a commentator, editorialist, and bloviator giving my thoughts and observations, reviewing the day's news events in order to create a more informed and educated populace as mandated by my role as a responsible broadcaster in, by, and for the metropolitan broadcasting area of Portland. Most of this interview sounds like it's done by a woman who's waiting to find out how long it's going to be before they bring her an extra carrot stick to stir her Bloody Mary at my father's place. That's what it sounds like to me. I'm not saying she's drunk. I'm saying that if I were to find out later, demonstrably and exhaustively, that she were drunk during this interview, I would be surprised not at all. Because she sounds to me like she's about nine sheets to the wind. She's got this sort of slurring going on, and she has a strange, overly mannered way. Have you ever given a deposition to the man for an
answer? Yes.
Now, are you allowed to write it down and read from it?
No, and I think that's why it sounds so awkward. It sounds like she's operating from having memorized a lot of how to say things.
Do we know in the story if she's reading it or if it's from memory? There's no way this woman memorized this.
I don't know.
Because
it goes on and on forever. I don't know if you're allowed to read your statement in a deposition. Maybe you are.
Hey, if somebody out there's been deposed, and I know you have, let us know about that. That's a thing that I would like to have some knowledge about that.
From the text box, someone says, "And the scoundrel Al Gore, a rapacious rapscallion, stared into her eyes with the most smoldering gaze, locking her into his inescapable embrace,
filling her with smoky, conflicted agony as his butterscotch eyes bored deeper into her soul." But so this woman, she has this sort of very it's not even like florid prose because it's just way too wooden for that. But it is as though someone went through and it's like when you see a little girl clunking around in mom's high heels, you know, and trying to put on her makeup to look grown up. That's what her language here sounds like. It's like she's gone through and she's littered it with a bunch of crap she found in a Peter Funk's To Better Word Power book. But then later on she says, again, presumably in some dullard southern twang. But then he was like a crazy sex poodle, which is the, like the money line here that I can't seem to find. Let's just pick a random point here in the interview, and this is so this is the Al Gore
Al Gore audio roulette.
I cannot begin to imagine that such a public figure who was married with a very public life with his wife and had books published about family life and relationships with his spouse, and who was on some book or film tour of an altruistic environmental nature would be anything less than a model of stellar integrity.
Okay, she is reading.
There's just
she's reading.
Do you see
that.
What I'm saying? There's there's no way that she's just committed this to memory. She's reading it off the page. And so then my question is does anybody is there and this is if it sounds like I'm picking on this woman, I guess I am because she's the because she's the example. In other words, she's the reason that we're talking about this. But just in general, I'm interested to know like all. Does anybody, when you give, I don't know if this is actually a deposition or if it's just a statement. I don't even really know what the, I guess a deposition is for court, right? I mean, the deposition, I think, is actually for if it's going to be read into a file or into the record.
It is a legal document.
Well, this is presumably a legal document, too, or is it? I don't know what the, well, anyway, I wonder if there's anybody who actually verifies that you, you know, that you've read the statement or that you wrote the statement yourself, that the statement is, in fact, your own. What if you have to sign something saying that you wrote this, this is your telling of the story, that no one put these words in your mouth? Because this does not at all, even if she was reading it, if it was something that she herself wrote, it would come off a lot more natural than it does. Because you're not just hearing somebody who's speaking in a stilted fashion. You're hearing somebody using words for the first time ever in her life. Let's just do like one more thing and then we'll take a little bit of a break. We'll do a Pop Culture Authority. We'll come back, more news. Kelly Clark. True Blood recap and so forth. By the way, don't forget you go to rickemerson.com. You can now give a gift subscription to this very fine radio program. You can do that at rickemerson.com. Right under the Listen Live button, you look for the link that says give a gift subscription, and you can do that. Or you can just go to rickemerson.com/gift. And here's a little bit more audio from the Al Gore accuser.
Okay. I cannot begin to imagine that such a public figure who was
sorry, that's the same place. Let me skip ahead. It's the
head, and eventually he seemed to be drowsing lightly on the table. Then I quietly told him again that the session was over and that I was going to go wash my hands and arms and give him privacy to get up off the table and re-robe so that I could pack up my items and leave. This is the thing of also like, I can get out, you save face, so you're not going to get violent with me, you know. When I came out, he was in his robe and he complimented me on the session. I felt I could leave without further problems from him, but I was wrong in that surmising. I was.
Oh, wow. That is fantastic.
I was wrong in that surmising.
That was, my surmisifications turned out to be woefully inaccuratized.
And eventually he seemed to be drowsing lightly on the table. And eventually he seemed to be drowsing lightly. Resistance was a dangerous tactic to use if I wanted to avoid being raped. I had the fear that rape would be inevitable if I could not get out of the room, yet I could see no way to immediately leave.
There's a door! Is she in his hotel room? Is that where this took place?
Yeah, this is in his hotel room. Yeah, it's in a hotel room.
I mean, presumably the hotel room is inside, you know, a hotel. So it's not like help is my, and then he had me in the Mojave Desert, and I had nowhere to go, had no wineskin.
Al Gore is so massively powerful.
And rotund, by the way.
He's a huge, massively powerful man.
Jesus, God almighty. All right. There's more here than we can even, we'll play some more of this later on. I mean, it's just unreal. This is a strange world we live in, Don Taylor. I mean, this is...
I will feel genuinely terrible later if it turns out that there was actually any veracity to any of this, but honestly...
But you know that's not going to be
the case. Sounds like such a load of hokum.
There's no... You and I talked earlier, and I guess we will discuss this, I think, further... further later on in the show, but you and I talked a bit about the business of not identifying her by name. Mm-hmm. And my thing is, in my opinion, this is just me now. If we can have an open and honest relationship, well, not an open relationship. That's the wrong way to put it. Never mind. We'll discuss when we come back. On the way, we have Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. More Al Gore audio. We have a recap of last night's episode of True Blood. Taser Watch. on the way. I didn't even tell you about this. I didn't even get to this thing, but with my leverage audition. So we got to talk about that.
And I didn't get to tell you about buying pants, because my life is that exciting.
That sounds like a real barn burner of a story, Don. Thanks for thanks for giving us a heads up on that. If you would like to join us via email, you can do it. It's Rick Emerson. I'm sorry, Rick at rickemerson.com. Rick at rickemerson.com. The text box is running right now at rickemerson.com, the website, or your phone calls at 503-505-6964. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here on the Emerson News Network. Don't go anywhere.
Is the closing theme to WKRP in Cincinnati really just gibberish?
From the Emerson News Network, this is Pop Culture Authority.
I'm Rick Emerson. In life, there are many difficult questions. Why are we here? What is the nature of the existence of God? Why do birds suddenly appear whenever you are near? And so on. Another such question is, what the hell is that guy singing at the end of WKRP in Cincinnati? Everyone has their own interpretations, and rock music being the rather visceral art form that it is, no one bothered to inspect the matter too closely. They just sort of hummed along, enjoying the melody, the beat, and the song's propulsive energy. Over time, though, it became somewhat vexing. No set of proposed lyrics seemed to fit what the singer was actually saying. Something about a bartender, and a line about do-a-do-a-ma-play-a-la, it made no sense at all. Unless you know the truth. There really are no words. WKRP creator Hugh Wilson had written lyrics to the show's opening theme, then asked musician Jim Ellis to compose music for the show's closing. Ellis, like many musicians, wrote the melody using nonsense words as a sort of rhythmic placeholder. When Wilson heard the demo version, he loved the idea of the lyrics being totally unintelligible, a sort of parody of the assertion that much of rock and roll couldn't be understood. So, the fake, non-existent lyrics remained. So, what are the closing words to WKRP in Cincinnati? Well, in this rock and roll instance at least, the answer is that, as your mother always claimed, it really is just a lot of nonsense.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
I'm a champion of D&D. MC Escher, that's my favorite MC. Keep your 40 out, just have an Earl Grey tea. My rims never spin. To the contrary, you'll find that they're quite stationary. All of my action figures are cherry. Stephen Hawking's in my library. My MySpace page is all totally pimped out. Got people begging for my top 8 spaces. Yo, I know pie to 1,000 places. Ain't got no grill, but I still wear braces. I order all of my sandwiches with mayonnaise. I'm a whiz at Minesweeper, I can play for days. Once you see my sweet moves, you're gonna stay amazed. My fingers moving so fast, I'll set the place ablaze. There's no killer rap I haven't run. At Pascal, well, I'm number one. Do vector calculus just for fun. I ain't got a gap, but I got a soldering gun. Happy Days is my favorite theme song. I can sure kick your butt in a game of ping pong. I'll ace any trivia quiz you bring on. I'm fluent in JavaScript as well as Klingon. R-I-C.
You see me roll on my Segway. I know in my heart they think I'm wide and nerdy.
Think I'm just too wide and nerdy.
Think I'm just too wide and nerdy.
Can't you see I'm wide and nerdy?
Look at me, I'm wide and nerdy. I like
the roll. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. Weird Al Yankovic. 503-505-6964 in just a few minutes. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week will be joining us here. So I went over and I saw over the weekend that that story about Jason Bateman, who was cutting in line for the iPhone. Everybody was booing him. And then I was just telling Don about this during the break. So then over the weekend, I got this great email from Thomas Gill, who, and it was just, it's like from, you know, from anybody else, you'd look at this and you'd think it was the guy like picking a fight. You know, it was a guy like sending some snotty, like, I'm going to provoke Don into coming over and giving me fisticuffs. But I think he was just, I think he was sincerely concerned that you were misinformed because you made that. This all started because when I posted the information about how to stream the show on your iPhone or your iPad or your iTouch or whatever, he noted that apparently it doesn't work on the one place it doesn't work is the original iPhone. The original first version iPhone, it doesn't work. But that reminded me of this thing you'd said on Friday, where you made some reference to the fact that you felt that they were not necessarily the most durable or reliable pieces of equipment.
The early iPods.
Is it the iPod? Okay.
Yes.
So then I got this email from him, and the best thing about it was, and people who know a lot about computers or technology, and especially Apple people, it's this singular tone that interlaces through much of their communication, where it's like the deepest concern that you have somehow gotten access to faulty information, that somewhere there is an integer that is wrong, and so you have come up with a false conclusion. So I don't really know what the answer to that is, but apparently if you got the original iPhone, not the iPod, if you get the original iPhone, the streaming is a little bit it's sketchy or doesn't work or something. But you know what? That's your fault for being a late adopter, I suppose. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program coming up within this hour. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week will be joining us. Let's see. We also have a True Blood recap, and we'll have more audio from the Al Gore thing. Just before we get into the call with Kelly Clark, and before we talk about your pants. My thing about this woman who is making this claim against Al Gore, we were talking about this during Legion of News, and you made this statement, and I hate to do this because I feel like I'm ambushing you on something. I feel like I'm just with that. But you said this thing that I am kind of surprised, because I got a lot of email response about just the story in general, but I'm surprised that nobody latched onto this statement of yours, where you said, well, as a woman, which was then, but then it was followed by like, and I feel torn about whether to identify the names of people who accuse someone else of sexual whatever, because you know it's the right of women to be da 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 da. Presumably, like the rights of women aren't any more important than anybody else.
No.
And presumably, the rights of sexual assault victims aren't more important than anybody else. I mean, you go find somebody who you know whose brother got shot in the face. He's probably not going to tell you that. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, at least he wasn't molested. They only shot him to death. You know, thank God that he was not battered instead. I mean, it's just I'm not trying to make light of it. I'm just saying, like, you know, somebody does something bad or harmful to you. It doesn't really matter what you know. Bad is bad.
I think the reason I said that is because I don't tend to like really think about being female very often. I don't live my life like, you know, identifying primarily as a woman and then this and this and this, which sounds fairly patently obvious, but I've known a lot of women over the years that if you ask them, you know, tell me about yourself, well, I'm a girl.
I'm a mom.
And, you know, I'm a mom. Yeah. And it's like, and honestly, my gender, you know, I feel like I'm a guy with boobs most of the time. So
I put that on your business card. She's a guy with boobs. Don Taylor, weekdays, 1.
And so when it comes to things like this, I'm sitting here with you and the two of us are talking about this and my reaction is, this sounds like a bunch of crap and she sounds like, you know, but there's this thing in the back of my mind that I sort of feel like, well, you know, I should kind of play the female role here in some capacity and say, well, you know, Rick, you know, it's good to let sexual abuse accusers maintain their anonymity because it makes them feel more comfortable in going forward to the police. And, you know, but at the same time, I also see the whole point of, you know, yes, you should know who your accuser is and you should be able to face your accuser. And plus, I think this all sounds like a huge load of crap.
Well, that's the thing. It's obviously a big load. I mean, in my opinion, of course. I need to start putting a blanket sort of, you know, in Rick Emerson's opinion that just plays with an ellipsis that just plays at the top of the show. It's not just that. It's not just that it sounds implausible in, like, every way, which it does to me anyway. It's also that she's no longer accusing him of that. Like, that's the thing. Like, or she's not accusing him of it in any active, present tense way. She is saying, I mean, she hasn't recanted it, so I guess maybe it's an ongoing. I guess as long as she doesn't rescind the accusation, you could argue that it is an ongoing assertion.
Yeah.
But it seems like she hasn't. She's not pressing any charges against him. The cops wanted her to make a case, and she wouldn't. So therefore, it's not an active assertion. So in my opinion, then she loses the right to anonymity. I believe this might be Kelly Clark. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who might this be on this fine Monday?
Hey.
Hello, Kelly. How are you today?
Hey, it's Kelly Clark.
Hi. How are you, sister?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I am doing fantastic. It occurs to me now that we're on the next iteration of this program, you're going to need some kind of an introductory theme, because we used the food porn theme when you were at KUFO. So do you have a preference for that?
I don't know. I also had Minnesota. Back to that, just so I can keep it with the Dandy Warhols.
All right. I'll look into it. All right. Excellent. Fantastic. Minnesota. Kelly Clark. So how's life? How are things?
You know, things are good. I'm stuck in my office right now instead of hanging out with you guys in your fabulous new studio, which is not my choice because they keep the air conditioner on. You know, it sets the heat down to about negative 10 at all times. So I'm actually wearing a blanket right now.
The thing that we've learned here is that we have to come to it's the whole National Geographic thing where they teach you dress in layers. I come here in just like the jeans and the t-shirt, but then I bring multiple layers of clothing because the air conditioning here, it only has two modes, one of which is frigid, the other which is immolate. And so you're either way too hot or you're way too cold. Plus, there's something about the vents and the way they're angled, and I think a lot of offices have this, where there's like about 6 square inches of the office that if you happen to walk through them or you stand there, parts of you will in fact just crystallize and shatter. But then the rest of the office is unbelievably sort of, humid and stuffy. So it's a
And you're sitting in that frosty area.
I'm sitting in the cool zone.
I am in the cool zone, and then our poor music team actually has an oscillating fan going at all times, even in December, and they are wearing tank tops, which is not an attractive sight, really.
I thought you moved to plush new digs.
Oh, we did. We moved to plush new digs like 3 or 4 years ago, where the air conditioning still had the exact same problems. We brought over the demons from the old one, the old office.
I don't know
what happened.
You know, it's to remember your roots. It's to bring
karma.
You know what it is?
It's just karma. It's all the bad things we've ever done is coming back through us, in the forms of climate control.
Well, why should I be the only one who suffers?
Exactly.
A couple of things, by the way. I don't know if this is something I hadn't really thought about. But I wanted to say, well, first of all, that to say that we've been on now for about a week, a little week and a couple hours here, and so. We're going to have you come into the studio and check it out in person at some point, because it really is the idea that this alleged network didn't even exist like 8 days ago and that now it actually is up and functional is more than a little astounding. And so it really is a testament to what you can achieve if you've got like $9 and a glue gun. So you'll have to come see it in person.
You were part of the DIY craft revolution, Rick Emerson.
That's
what that's all about.
That's right.
Crafty Wonderland.
I'm sort of a scrapbooker of the air.
He's knitting microphone cozies.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
I would pay money to see that. My God.
And
you should too.
At some point we'll have you in the studio here. But I know that the holidays are sort of. So today is what? Today is the 28th. Does that mean the 4th of July is next week? When is the 4th of July?
4th of July is on Sunday.
All right.
That's what we're all dealing with here, is that we get one special day off. We get a special day off, so we've been planning all sorts of deliciousness that we could do this Sunday. So we've been writing a bunch about that as well, yeah.
So you guys, there's several things happening. First of all, there's Willamette Week's Finder Magazine, which I believe is out as of, is it last Wednesday or is it this coming Wednesday?
It's this coming Wednesday. You can get your copy of Finder. It's actually not in the newspaper. You can either go to wweek.com and look up where it's going to be. It's at Jackpot. It's at Everyday Music and Powell's, all those kind of places. Or you can go to Powell's this Wednesday at, I believe, 9 a.m. and get your hands on a fresh, hot copy of it. And we are actually giving away tickets to see Stephen Malcolmus to a couple of our people who are going to be down there. So if you get a copy of Finder and it has a golden ticket in it, Willy Wonka style, you'll get all sorts of fabulous prizes.
Excellent.
And if not, you'll just have to deal with having the best guide to Portland, Oregon that has ever been created.
Actually, on this past Sunday's Outlook Portland, I interviewed Aaron Mesh from Willamette, and he gave me a little sneak peek of some of the stuff that was in there. And it's we had a discussion about, let me ask you this, just off the top of your head. One of the things about the recession is that it triggered, I think, to some degree, this like explosion in the food cart business. And I got lots of friends who operate food carts, and I eat those things all the time. Once the economy recovers, which is obviously like not happening now, and it's not going to happen on anything approaching the timeline that they're claiming, but when the economy does come around, is the food cart thing going to implode and vanish, or is it sort of, it was created during the recession, but it's going to stay here forever?
Oh, absolutely not. They're going to stay around. Actually, food carts were getting, they were taking hold, and they were getting more and more popular every year, even before the recession, because street food is the thing that's perfect for Portland. Portland is a chill kind of place. It's a comfortable place. People like really good value. And so as a consumer, food carts are amazing, and you can get them at weird times. And, you know, we're kind of quirky, and we like anything that's different, and we love helping the little guy. So what's better than helping a dude that's sweating away in, like, a box, like at a tin can? You know, we love that kind of thing. And then on the side of the purveyors, the people who are making this food, we have an amazing – and we have an inordinate number of chefs and people who are obsessed with food in this town for our size. And they all think that they make one thing better than everybody else. They make the best – Korean short ribs. They make the best waffles. You know, everybody thinks they make something the best. And, you know, whereas before they would have to get together investors and find a way to rent a storefront, now they can rent a Winnebago and put it out on a lot, and people will come taste for $4 or $5 this amazing thing that they claim that they can make better than anybody else, and it works.
Winnebagos.
We are getting Winnebagos. We're getting well known all over the country as kind of mecca for food carts, which is hilarious and awesome.
I think it's great that Winnebago's used to be this thing for your elderly dying relatives, for them to go to Sarasota, my wife and I are trekking to Reno, and like three times a year they would load up the Winnebago and head down. Speaking of making one thing better than anybody else, so there is no more American food than the hot dog, especially as we approach the 4th of July. Yet, let me ask you this. As much as the hot dog is hailed as the great American food, you know, there is, I think with the exception of Wiener Schnitzel, you know, I think we were talking about this on Don's show way back, there is no nationally established chain of hot dog stands. Is there? I mean, there's no hot dog emporium of any kind except,
no,
I think, for Wiener Schnitzel.
No, there's like no McDogs or anything like that. But you know what we do have is, Portland has what I think should become a national chain, which is Wayne's Red Hots, Chicago-style dogs, which is absolutely amazing, and that's up on MLK. And if you haven't had one of Wayne's dogs, I don't think you've properly lived.
The last time I had a hot dog here was it was at that place on Hawthorne that's next to what used to be Sabalas Mount Tabor, next to Mount Tabor. It's by
Zach Shack. No, you went to Zach Shack.
Shack, yes.
Zach Shack is pretty great.
I went there. That thing was fantastic. I just wish that I had known in advance what it was going to be like, because I would have fasted, and then I would have consumed some sort of liquid metal type substance. I would have girded my loins early, because it was like the spice and the condiment and the whatever, and it was like it came back on me it bit back pretty quickly.
To be honest, though, my favorite place in hot dogs in town, besides Wayne's, hands down, is Otto's Sausage Kitchen in Woodstock. I don't know if you've been there before.
That place is fantastic. I am a huge fan of Otto's. And it's like, and they got the half oil drum or whatever outside that they cook the thing on right in front of you during the summer months.
Oh, yeah. It's the siren smell of smoke. My God. People line up from all over the neighborhood. People make pilgrimages there all summer long. It really is one of the best ways to spend a summer afternoon. It's outside of Otto's. Smelling them, grilling up all of the dogs. They have Otto's has more. I think I'm right about this. Otto's has more than 50 different kinds of sausages.
Yeah, no,
that they sell.
No,
it's amazing. They've been around since like 1930, and I was just telling somebody today, we were talking about where to get hot dogs to bring them home and then grill them for 4th of July, and Otto's hands down has the best in town.
Now, see, we're doing that thing again. This is like every time you come on Outlook Portland, where now I'm hungry and my mouth is literally. I mean, nobody wants to hear this, but this is, I've got an actual like saliva buildup happening here.
I like to engender that. Yeah. I like to really have that response. I really like to have that effect on men everywhere.
So before we wrap all this up, I know that you have. It's good to see that the awkwardness that is an endemic part of our relationship, that dynamic has remained intact all through the many versions of this program.
You know what? If people are going to pay for you, I want them to get their money's worth.
That's right. And, you know, and Rick Emerson stammering and stuttering like a teenage screech in the presence of any woman is part of the ineffable charm of the Rick Emerson show. Before we wrap this, I know that you have not seen last night's True Blood, so I'm not going to spoil anything here. But I got to tell you, the level to which I did not see the last 90 seconds of last night's episode coming. I mean, it is one of those.
Oh God!
It's Don. You saw last night's True Blood. You saw the final moments.
Oh yes,
I
did.
I mean, just I don't
hate
even know.
You cable people.
There is no superlative. I have no emoticon strong enough to convey the feeling that was put into me by the end of last night's episode. It was so disturbing and hilarious and like kind of strangely hot all at once that I can't even really describe it.
And just
so
wrong.
Beyond the whole full frontal Nazi werewolf killing torture scene, beyond that,
I'll put it this way: I have no doubt. I would swear on a stack at King James's that the end of last night's True Blood episode came about with the writers sitting in a room somewhere, probably ingesting any number of odd noxious chemicals, and wondering exactly how insane they could get before the audience finally just said, okay, we give up. I mean, it was just sort of like, how far can we push this and the audience not just think we're completely unhinged? So it's, you got to watch it. I think there was probably a bet of some kind riding on whether or not they could get lasted. The idea that television, like, you know, 20, 30, 50 years ago, would ever have aired the scene that ended last night's True Blood episode is just, you can't really picture Uncle Milty doing what was being done last night at the end of True Blood.
Right now, I just have like a greatest hits parade of the most disturbing moments of True Blood sort of shuddering through my brain and trying to figure out what's worse than the Marianne licking the fertility egg scene. And
Yeah, that's no good. And then when the heart souffle or whatever, that was no picnic either. So no.
Actually, one of my favorites was the Merlot's orgy scene with the ketchup and the mustard last season.
Can I just tell you, that is a group of people, you know, not the fine actors, but as characters, that's a group of people that I don't want to ever see orgifying. I don't want to be part of it. I don't find it arousing. It's just like a whole lot of grease and underarm odor. I mean, that show is like every time you watch Real Sex on HBO and they interview some bucktooth couple that's always in Portland. Always. They're always in Portland.
Always.
And they go, well, we have an open, Janice and I have an open relationship. And then she says, that's right. And, you know, Phil and I feel that taking multiple lovers or having a polyamorous relationship is just it's more natural, and it's you know, it's what makes us happy. And then they cut to a guy loading up like a weak ass paper plate with refried beans, while in the background his wife is getting it put to him, you know, by like five guys as she rocks back and forth in a sex hammock. And I'm watching this going, Jesus God almighty. So maybe that's just me. We should probably wrap this up. All right, Kelly Clark, the Finder magazine comes out this Wednesday. You can get it at Powell's or better bookstores everywhere. Find out more at WWeek.com. And we'll have to have you in the studio sometime soon.
Absolutely. I promise to watch up all my True Blood so I can be on the same level as you two, because apparently you guys are on a higher plane of true blooddom at this point than I am.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sorry about the whole sex hammock thing there. All right. There you go. That's Kelly Clark.
Oh, no. Sex hammocks are always good. Right. Have a nice day,
you
two.
Thank you. There you go. That's Kelly Clark, ladies and gentlemen, right there on the Rick Emerson radio program. Without further ado, at the news desk, this is Don Taylor. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A snorkeler is recovering from traumatic injuries after he was bitten on the neck by a large alligator. Peter Butt, 55, suffered a broken jaw, lacerations to his neck, and bruising when the animal attacked him near the Silver Springs Amusement Park near Ocala, Florida.
No one told me. I'm sorry. Not that. No, stop. Damn it.
That's what he sounded like at the time.
No, I've got nothing. Yeah.
All right. Mr. Butt was... was snorkeling at the Fort King Canal for water samples with a coworker. Okay. As he tested them on the service boat dock, a 500-pound alligator struck. The environmental consultant managed to struggle free from the beast's grip and was pulled to safety. Emergency workers treated the victim, who was flown to Shands Hospital in Gainesville, Florida.
Damn it! Sorry. There we go.
That's
all
it.
Right, okay. Damn it.
He remains in fair condition. If anybody could survive something like this, it's Pete. Pete's a big, strong man, Mr. Butt's co-worker, Eric Hutchison,
said. Says the self-hating Eric Hutchins.
My assumption is this alligator was hiding under one of the old boats that doesn't move, and he has been sitting there for years, Mr. Hutchison said. Trappers captured and killed the animal. Joy Hill of the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission said the alligator's meat and hide will be harvested by the trapper with the commission's policy.
This is like the story we had in Legion of News about the bull that gored the guy.
Yeah.
This is the story of the bull who gored the guy in the house that Jack built, and then they killed the bull. The bull is just doing what bulls do. If you allow yourself near an animal that has huge horns or teeth or fangs or spines or breathes fire or flies or lays eggs in your thorax or whatever, You get what's coming to you. That's it. You know, it always bugs me. At the very least, you know what you could do is you could do the, the video game regeneration thing, you know, where the animal, you know, just has to respawn somewhere else. You take it and you drop it somewhere randomly in the world. The idea, and I don't, look, don't get me wrong, I don't care about animals. I don't care about other things in general. who I trust? Me. That's who. The kids, animals, people, plants, they don't really matter to me. But it does seem fundamentally unfair that you're not only just punishing, but killing the alligator for just doing what it does. And I suppose you could argue that the guy himself was punished, Mr. Butts or whatever his name was punished by having the alligator take a big bite out of his jugular. But it doesn't seem enough somehow. It seems like he ought to be punished more.
Well, in this case, I have to say, you know, he was, you know, just taking some water samples and the alligator said, ha ha. So I can, you know, this isn't like when you go to the zoo and you're like climbing over the fence and, you know, and you're just being an idiot and the polar bear attacks you. It seems like the guy really, you know, was just minding his own business.
I suppose.
The alligator was the evil one this story.
It just seems to me it is just part of what makes the world is just one big role-playing game. That's the thing. The world is one big Warhammer 40,000 tournament. And every now and again, the dice are going to roll, and you know what? The alligator comes out of nowhere. Or you get flesh-eating disease. Or you win the lottery. Or you come home and your wife is humping a whole hockey team. I mean, you never quite know.
Sex hammock.
In a sex hammock. So we need to get some sort of, you know, when nature attacks watch, because we have, I think you mentioned this, because we have the Geek Watch still being reassembled. Some guys found copies of it and sent it to me. So I'm reassembling that. Clown Watch, Darwin Watch. I got to put those together. I have found all the others. They all got put into a hard drive that I stuck somewhere. And I can't quite find it, so I'm having to recreate them all in bits and pieces.
But we need one for savage animal attacks.
That's the thing. We need one. I don't know what it would be called, and I don't know what. Perhaps this could be the first contest that we run here on the new Rick Emerson program. I'm not sure what the prize would be. We got a whole bunch of stuff that I brought over here from the Laro things. So I got this, I got a bunch of the Ice Road Trucker books that are autographed and so forth. So it's we got a bunch of stuff. But at some point, we got to put together a when animals attack or a. You know, nature versus man, or I don't see. That's the thing; is all the good names are taken. I'm not even sure what we'd nature watch. I mean, I guess we could just call it that, but it lacks color somehow. Yeah. So, if you got any ideas about that, we will take your suggestions at some point in the future. So, so be thinking about that, won't you, please? Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
As part of the seamless entertainment of the Rick Emerson Show, would you hand me the papers that are in the printer?
Yeah, let me just stop the show down for a second and reach over to the printer and grab that for you.
I tried to efficiently print this out while you were talking to Kelly Clark and
didn't really
realize
work.
I was printing out all 196 comments that followed the story.
Well done. It's a good thing we're not paying for the ink ourselves.
Exactly.
Oh,
wait a minute.
Oh, damn.
Yes.
All right.
Police officers are being named in a lawsuit over the tasing of a.
Is this a taser watch?
I failed to set this.
You know
up.
What that was? That was a little instant karma right there for your mockery of me.
That's
and my
what
skills.
I guess.
All right. Fantastic, ladies and gentlemen. For Monday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program, here is your taser watch. Here's your taser watch for Monday.
Police officers have been named in a lawsuit over the tasering of a bedridden 86-year-old woman, saying that the grandmother threatened officers with a knife.
She had it coming. She was asking for it, is what they're saying.
In December 2009, the officers came the woman's grandson. I have like three different stories going here so that I can actually tell this properly. Lona Varner threatened to stab officers with a knife when they came to her apartment in December.
Now, where is this at?
This is in El Reno, Oklahoma.
Okay.
Her grandson had come to check on her, saying that she was refusing to take her medication and he feared that she was suicidal. He called emergency services for someone to come help, and they sent 10 armed police officers. Officers described Varner as aggressive and threatening. She was 86 years old.
Now, was she in bed?
She was in bed.
Exactly how threatening could you be? you know, while still being in bed. Exactly. What is it? I mean, it seems like the amount of menace that you're able to instill or convey at that point is fairly finite.
Well, apparently she pulled a kitchen knife out from under her pillow and threatened to kill the primary officer on the scene, Officer Duran. The officer reported she took a more aggressive posture after that on the bed when the other officers arrived. She said, "If you come any closer, you're getting the knife." She says
the cops were there because the son or the grandson called them.
Right.
And this and just
because he was concerned she wasn't taking her medication and she was
the answer to that.
Difficult to handle.
Well, okay, fair enough. I mean, you know, I guess if she's waving a knife around and threatened to cut you and whatnot.
The first officer on the scene said, the woman said, "I want to die. I did not call you, so get the expletive out of my house." The person also said that Varner pulled out a knife and said, "If you try to get the knife, I will stab you and kill you. I killed 4 Japs in World War II, and I wouldn't bat an eye at killing you."
Wow.
Officers said they threatened to use the taser if she didn't cooperate. They said she became more aggressive, and then they used the device on her. She's a pretty salty old lady, and she's really mad about it.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yes.
My thing is, they were called there because she wasn't taking her meds, allegedly, and she was a little tough to handle. Although, I guess you wouldn't really know if that's true. You can't really check the veracity of the statement until you sort of talk to her. And if you can't talk to her because you can't get close, and you can't get close because she's got the knife. I mean, I guess I can. I was trying to find some way in which I could root for the old woman here. But but I guess not. I guess once again, as is always the case, I'm rooting for the tasering party. There's never a time when I'm not rooting for the tasering person, by the way.
When her grandson yelled, "Don't tase my granny."
Sorry. I had a mouthful of liquid there.
The officers threatened to tase him instead.
Yeah.
In the police report, Officer Dugan asserted...
Being a cop is awesome. I will tase you and your whole family.
They handcuffed him, took him to the waiting squad car. They released him without charge sometime later.
Wait, what did they handcuff him for? Is it just because he said, "Don't tase my granny"?
Apparently so.
All right.
They also stepped on the old woman's oxygen hose... until she began to suffer oxygen deprivation. They then fired the taser at her, hitting her twice, causing her to pass out, handcuffed her, and sent her to a psychiatric ward where she was held for 6 days.
Wow. This is the best story we've had since this show debuted. That's awesome. Excellent. So they handcuff the grandson. They taser her twice. They step on her and
cut off her
oxygen hose. They step on her hose until she suffers oxygen deprivation. Then they handcuff her and then they throw her in the slam for a week.
Yes.
Jesus, don't F with the Oklahoma police.
The lawsuit is asking that the city pay at least $75,000.
Oh, man. I tell you what, I would take up election and I would pay $75,000 if we could get like one of these happening every month. Fantastic. There's your Taser Watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Excellent.
I can't do it, bro! Don't taste me, bro!
Just warms the cockles of the heart. All right, let's do one more here, and then in a few we'll roll into the True Blood recap from last night. And I know that you mentioned this thing about pants that I have to follow up on, but let's do one more story. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Well, we can either talk about Waylon Weaselhead again, or we can go straight to the penis watch.
I don't know if you'd like to
follow one watch with another watch.
I'm still learning
how you do things around here.
Let me do a quick mental test of the people and what they want to hear. All right. I think sources are pointing to penis.
Okay.
Hold on. Wait. No. Let me check. Let me make sure that I'm absolutely right about that. Wait. Yes. No. I think it's penis. Ladies and gentlemen, here is your penis watch. Or is it? This is totally my fault, by the way. I can't even blame that on technology. This is your penis watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Take a look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start a melting away. Everything is going my way.
The text box lit up with penis, 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 penis.
Thank you. Those are my people. I know what they want. Let me just say real quickly that when I saw Colton when Jonathan Colton was here again, I don't know, maybe 3 months ago, which was just like, and I mean this in the best way, just like, man, it was like Goontown. I mean, it was nerds on parade. It was, as I think Paul and Storm, not Storm Large, but Paul and Storm, who are these two guys that are his opening act most of the time, as they themselves noted, it was like a Think Geek exploded all over a group of people. Because Paul and Storm, who are now just billed as Paul and Storm, used to be part of this band Da Vinci's Notebook, an a cappella group, and occasionally they'll bust out some old Da Vinci's Notebook songs, and every time they come to town, I hope for them to do the Penis Watch, and they never do. And I always want them to do the Penis Watch because it makes up for the time that Colton was in the studio with us being interviewed, and Paul and Storm are standing in the back of the room because they do his harmonies and stuff with him. And the entire time, I didn't check my email, of course, the entire time people are emailing me, those are the enormous penis guys! The penis guys are in the back of your studio! Have them sing the penis song! And I didn't realize that they were already gone. So I blew, yes, no pun intended, my one shot at having the enormous penis guys sing the song.
It's not your one shot. We can invite them again next time they're in town. Maybe they will come sit and chat with us, and we could get them to do it here in the studio.
Well, that's true. I mean, they'll be back.
We're high-powered radio juggernauts.
Colton comes to town like every 5 minutes. I mean, he's like bowling for soup. I mean, they're probably playing at the Hawthorne Theater right now. Here's your penis watch for Monday.
An old Harbor Bay St. Catherine, Jamaica resident is now recovering after he had to be hospitalized when a large pig bit him on the penis. Reports reaching the Jamaica Star are that the incident occurred recently.
Is that really what passes for a timeline in Jamaica? I know there are laid-back people down there. Well, when did it happen recently? I don't know.
Well, what's also interesting is that as I get further into the story, the quotes from the witnesses are actually written in pidgin English. So this
now, please do explain for the people pidgin English, if you will.
It is a patois. It is a can't really say it's a separate dialect, but it's a version of English that is spoken by islanders.
Is it comparable to some of the, you know, because there's a whole thing in the 90s where about the what was it, Ebonics or whatever, where it was like a dialect that was particular, you know, to, you know, everybody, Ebonics was like a black thing, but it wasn't. It was just certain parts of the country, and it was certain sections of the country, especially, especially in, if you went on the west, and then as the west curved down through the south, it was the most prominent. Is it like that? Is it like a cultural dialect?
Yeah, it's like sort of Cajun when you hear people speaking, a combination of
because the thing is they
Cajun.
Speak Pidgin in Hawaii, I think, as well. Because our chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa, is always talking about Pidgin. Hold on, let me see if I can actually. Hold on, now that I've managed to fix the. Hold on, now that I managed to actually fix the phone, I had this whole thing where
I may have been wrong. Okay, I'm probably wrong about it being pidgin, because technically there is an actual dialect in Jamaica that is referred to as Jamaican English.
Okay.
So it's different from pidgin, which is an offshoot of Chinese, I think.
I'm going to see you're making that up. I'm going to skip the whole thing about the Jamaican. Yes. This story very hard to understand. Blah,
Jamaican
blah, blah.
English is a dialect that combines American English and British English dialects together and has different spellings and.
Hold on, let me see if I can. Let's see if I can find some sort of an answer to this.
Okay.
Let's see. This is. I guess it would help if I actually. Hold on a second. All right, and call. All right. No, she's not around. All right. I was gonna endeavor to find out the answer to this. Wait, let me try this one more time.
Okay.
And I'm just so desperate for an outgoing call to be successful on the show that really I'm just looking for any excuse. Let's see. And all right.
I could continue to tell the story while you.
But that would interrupt the graceful beauty and elegant smoothness with which I am placing an outgoing call. Ah, listen to that in your face, you sons of bitches. I don't even know who I'm. I don't
and
even know
my
who
sons
I'm.
Of bitches, you mean me.
I don't even know who I'm rejoindering to. Hello, Cheryl.
Yeah.
Hello. Hi, Cheryl. It's Rick and Dawn. We're broadcasting live to billions of people now. How are you on this fine Monday?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm not calling in the middle of some sort of delicate moment, am I?
No. I'm just still recovering from that whole True Blood mess.
Oh, man. Don't even get me started. Well, I mean, I will get started here in just a second. So we have a story right now. And it turns out that it's actually not pidgin as such. It's Jamaican English. Is that
Jamaican
what you said it was?
English.
But Don said that it appeared that part of the story, that when they quoted one of the witnesses discussing, by the way, a man whose penis had been bitten by a pig, which maybe is a frequent occurrence. She said that she thought it was written in pidgin, and we were trying to explain what pidgin is. Now, is that not a thing that they speak in your homeland of Hawaii?
It is. I have no idea what Jamaican pidgin English would be, though.
What is, like, regular, like, in Hawaii, when somebody says they're speaking pidgin, what is that?
It's basically a way of shortening shortening an English sentence to make it, I guess, look, I'm having trouble communicating here. It would be, like, on plantations, there were so many different races, and everybody was speaking a different language, so they formed their own language so that everybody could kind of communicate on the same level.
So
you'd
like
have a mix of Hawaiian and Japanese and you know, Caucasian. It was just all thrown together. So instead of saying, like, how are you doing today, you would just say, how's it?
Oh, I see. Okay. And so that's why some of those phrases then leach their way into regular conventional English. How's it?
Yeah. Basically, it's just a way of, it's a much simpler way of speaking.
So it's like
it's a way of talking, but it's easier.
So it's like it's almost like a weird Esperanto thing where it was just a merging of a bunch of different languages.
Yeah, sort of.
All right, fantastic. And I was able to do this by placing an outgoing call correctly. Let's hear it for me.
Very exciting.
All right.
Yep, wait, I'm doing a wave for you right now.
Yeah, okay, thanks so much. All right, thank you. There goes Chief of Staff Cheryl Kenneco. All right, thanks. Thanks so much. All right, here's Dawn Taylor. All right, so this is, are you going to read now?
I'm
going to
read the story now.
Okay.
Well, the Old Harbor Bay St. Catherine resident recovering after hospitalization when a large pig bit him on the penis. The injured man is said to have spent almost a week in the hospital after he was bitten by the animal. A witness said, "Boy, me na no awa happen, mek the wicked hog bite the man." The Star learned that the man, who is the owner of the animal, went into the pig pen after deciding he wanted to sell one. It is understood that the owner and another man held the pig. However, the owner who held it closer to its head was bitten twice.
Now,
another resident said, "The hog dat him a try fi sell got violent and bite him pon him private, a straight hospital, and a 9 days him spend a hospital." The residents told the Star that they are baffled as to why the animal got so violent. "That's why some people are against eating pork, as hog eat anything it catch," said another concerned resident. When contacted, the Old Harbor Bay Police said they were aware of the attack.
Local Rube Earl Wiggins had this to say. "Wow, that's awesome. I would give anything if American newspapers would just start quoting people phonetically in whatever dialect they were speaking. You know, because, I mean, let's be honest, although this is a thing that just tends to get noticed, or examples of this in America tend to focus on the black community for some reason. But anybody who's ever spent any time in Utah knows that there's a fair number of white people in this country who do a full-on mangling of the English language every time they... And I'm not just talking about some guy, that got kicked in the head while shoeing a horse. I mean, like, you go to a city or a place where they have their own particular variation on the King's English, which bears no resemblance to our own.
Well, when I worked at the newspaper in St. Helens, I would write stories, and I often would change everyone's ain'ts to isn'ts because it just, you know, it just reads so awful when you're, like, writing, you know, trying to write a well-crafted news story, then you quote somebody, and they're just like, "Well,
I ain't never done no with the Yeah. You know, and it's just, yeah. Well, I mean, and it reads, by the way, like your newspaper is targeted at a bunch of toothless hillbillies.
And it also reads, if you actually write it the way they said it,
right,
it almost reads like you're trying to make them look bad.
Yeah. Yeah. So. How dare you quote me accurately? In Utah, as I pointed out, an example of this is where you will constantly, I mean, it's like, in Portland, everybody knows the irregardless thing, which is, you know, that's a minor complaint. But, like, in Utah, they just say things that are, like, just full-on, like, screaming retarded in the way that they sound when they're said out loud. At least irregardless, if you're listening with just kind of a lazy ear, that kind of sounds like it might be accurate. You know, like, if you're not paying that close attention. Because, I mean, flammable and inflammable mean the same thing. So, you know, whatever. In Utah, the thing you will constantly hear is you just hear these gum chewers. They'll talk about, "Well, I'm gonna go home and bath the dog." And I remember the first, like, 900 times somebody said it to me, I would kind of cock my head up and go, "What, you're what now, Bob? I'm gonna go home and bath the dog. You're gonna bath the dog?" Yeah, and I would say it back to him to see if, like, maybe he had some sort of a stroke or some sort of a circulation problem to the head. There was, like, a momentary aphasia happening. And so I thought, well, okay, look, if I say it back like that and he corrects me, then I know that it's just a problem in his brain. And I said, "So you're going to go home and bath the dog?" "Yes, I am." Okay. Well, you have fun with that. You know, which is, I think, some sort of an advanced version of that washing the dog business. So I think from now on, everyone ought to be quoted phonetically, and they ought to be quoted exactly as they have said a sentence. Because then there will be no hiding behind the gussying up that is given to you by a newspaper editor.
Well, yeah, and here's one of the a little dirty secret of the newspaper game, too, is that, you know, if I was writing a story and I didn't like someone very much.
You wouldn't clean it up?
I wouldn't clean it up.
Good for you. See, I like it when somebody admits their bias and the extent to which they abuse their power and authority. Well done, Don Taylor. That's your penis watch for Monday in the
Take
Rick Emerson Radio program.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a-melting away.
Bow, bow,
I take
bow.
A look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Bow, bow, bow.
Fantastic. All right. Before we move on to the True Blood recap, we'll get to that here in just a few. Don't forget a couple things. One, by popular demand, ye may now gift a subscription to the Rick Emerson radio program. So if you say to yourself, by God, what a fantastic program this is, and so reasonably priced, if only my cousin Jerry could listen to this. You may now give a subscription to this program, whether it's the live stream, the archive, whatever. It all comes under one 32 cents per day umbrella. You can gift that now. You can go to rickemerson.com/gift. rickemerson.com/gift, or it's right on the Listen Live button. When you go to the Rick Emerson Show section, it just says click here to give a gift subscription. You can do that. You can give a month, 3 months, a year, whatever your pleasure. You can do that at rickemerson.com. You may give a gift subscription as of now. Do it. Also, we had people saying, well, when am I going to be able to hear this on my Droid? Or, I mean, and the benchmark, and I don't mean any disrespect, honey, but the benchmark for this is my wife, because she's, how do I put this? My wife understands a lot about the culture of technology, you know, because she's sort of interested in people the same way that I am. Just like I don't play World of Warcraft, you know, but I know a lot about World of Warcraft, and I know a lot about the people who play it, because I find the culture of Warcraft fascinating. So my wife knows a lot about the culture of gadgets and technology, but she herself is not much of an early adopter. But as a result, she's sort of a technological canary in the coal mine. Like, when she starts, it's like, I apologize for how this sounds, sweetie. You know, I love you. But it's like how when your mom finally, you know, adopts a piece of technology and you go, oh, God, my mom has an iPhone. All right, now the worm has finally turned for good. So Lara got a Droid, and so now she's like, I can't. And it took her like 0.3 seconds to be, you know, I got a Droid. I can't get your show. And it was like out of the gate. She was like on my back about it. And so just really to quell the amount of nagging I'm getting at home, we had to put these instructions up. So right now they're at facebook.com/Rick Emerson, or you go to blog.rickemerson.com. It's the, you know, just the blog thing. It's blog.rickemerson.com. It is the most recent entry. We're going to make sure that it's a permanent part of the Rick Emerson Show section of the site. But right now it's at my Facebook page or at blog.rickemerson.com. Step by step, I mean really unbelievably basic, like turn on your computer, pick up the mouse. Just because I don't want to have any, you know, you're moving too fast. So there are step-by-step instructions there. It works on the Droid, works on iPhone, the Touch, the iPad, works on everything, I think, except the first-generation iPhone. But that's, you know, that's your boggle, friend. That's it's time to step up your game. And, just, you know, one either wants to listen or one does not wish to listen. That is between you and the universe. So you can do that now. Before we get to the True Blood thing, all I have written down here, and I don't even know what this means, mm-hmm. I have written down Don Taylor pants.
Pants.
And I don't even know what that's about. It's just that you said that there was something about pants that I had to ask you.
Well, we've talked about how coming in, you know, at the end of the weekend or after a day, and it's like, and talking about, you know, what we've done. And
what really, did you do this weekend?
Yeah, and the only really notable thing from my weekend was that I had to buy pants, and you and I have talked about shopping, and I loathe shopping, especially clothing shopping. I would rather go to the dentist or the DMV than actually have to shop for clothes. And I have like a couple of different, like this one style of pants that I know where they sell them. I enjoy buying them. Yeah, you know, I just go in. I know what size I wear. It's like, give me more of these.
Right.
And so I go to purchase them, and they don't have them right now because apparently it's summer, and it's been decided that all women everywhere, the only style of pants we're allowed to wear right now are some variation on cargo pants. That's all that's available.
Well, it is Portland.
And so, which is fine if you're not shaped like a sphere, as I am. because cargo pants are sort of, they're supposed to be sort of baggy and flowy.
Yeah.
And so, but when you're just essentially round, they fit like giant clown pants. So I was like trying on these giant clown pants and just hating them. So then I had to move the only other style of pants they had, which were blue jeans.
Hey, everybody, look at my public shame.
Yeah, and I'm walking out of the dressing room and my husband's going, let me see them. And I'm just standing there looking sad.
Oh, I don't even leave the dressing room sometimes. I don't even make it out. I'll put some clothing on and I'll go, nope, no one's going to see these.
Yeah. There was one pair that I tried on, and all Patrick heard was me go, no, at the top of my lungs, and that was it. So I try on jeans, and when you're a man, as you are, you know, men's jeans generally, they tend, you get the waist size and the inseam.
Yeah, so length. So it's like a 30, 32 or whatever.
Women, they sell them basically for, particularly at least for fat ladies, you've got size and then three general height categories. Average, tall, or petite, which is sort of hilarious.
What is petite? That's not a height.
I know. And especially if you're attaching petite to like a size in a fat lady store, that's kind of hilarious. But apparently petite is a nice way of saying short for women's clothes.
All right.
So I try on the average size ones, and the first pair I tried were too big. So then, you know, it's like the damn, you know, bears and the porridge or something. So then I try like another pair. And I'm trying on average because I'm just a skosh under 5'5", which is average height for a woman. And apparently these pant manufacturers believe that the average height for a woman is like 5'11", because they were just like... So the pants I'm wearing now, I actually bought these. And by the way, remember when jeans were like working class people's clothes?
Yes.
Do you know how expensive they are?
Wow, really?
When did they... I don't know. I've become that guy.
Have we entered that stage in your life?
We have. I remember.
$40? What are they? Do they come with gold in the pockets?
But yeah, but I'm wearing the petite length jeans, and I'm still stepping on the backs of them.
Now, I don't know. First of all, when I say that, you know, do you remember when jeans were for the working people? I really don't, actually. I mean, I'm saying that, but I guess I don't.
I thought they were supposed to be like working class people's clothes.
1814.
Well,
I mean,
I was a teenager in 1814, and we were all farmers.
I'm just saying the only time I remember jeans really being cheap clothes for working people was when I was a boy, but specifically when I was a kid and my parents would buy me Tough Skins at Sears. Yeah. And that's not because it's when I was a kid. It's because I went to Sears and I bought Sears brand jeans. I mean, I think that there, as long as there has been any item of clothing, I mean, I think probably after, after the first guy just found out if he lashed weeds to his feet, you know, he didn't step on brambles. There was some other guy in the next village who got, got a slightly higher class of weed that he lashed together, and he threaded lavender plant through it. And he goes, no, I'll charge more for these weeds. Make feet look svelte. So, I don't really remember that. The other thing is, don't get me started on the heights of jeans and because. And I know I sound like a woman when I say these sorts of things, but I was to understand the thing about being a guy is the whole world should know if you're a man, you don't have the brain power or the inclination to spend a lot of time trying to pick out clothing that fits. Even if I cared, which I really don't that much, I got a tiny brain and it fills up fast. And you know what? And I gotta categorize all the scenes where Christina Ricci has been topless since she turned 18, and that's it. And that takes up the bulk of my thought power. So what I wish to have is some sort of a scanner, you know, like when they do, what is that, image capturing for CGI, where they put Andy Serkis in a whole bunch of little buttons and then they film him. I want to have a machine, or like the thing at the beginning of Aliens, where it comes into the Nostromo capsule and it goes, and it scans Ripley, and it goes, Ripley, LNR. I want to have a thing that scans me. Like, you could sell me this, and it would be part of the webcam on my next MacBook or whatever. I stand in front of the MacBook. I hit start. I turn in a circle, nude if I have to. And it scans me, and then it goes online to, like, wherever. You know, the Gap or Levi's or something. It goes online and goes, look, we've scanned your body. These are the jeans that will fit. Bam, they're in the mail. Because
would you really, though, seriously, would you really do a naked scan of your body and send it somewhere on the internet?
I'd stand in some sort of brief. I wouldn't be nude. But I mean, just doesn't it seem like they ought to be able to just find something that goddamn fits?
Yeah.
Instead, let me just tell you this. See these jeans that I have right now? Now, I'm a big fan of these jeans. These are Levi's. They're sort of a dark. And again, I don't take a lot of time picking up my clothes because I basically just wear jeans and a black T-shirt every day. So, but I got these jeans. I like them. They're a 30-32. That's my size. Levi's 5'14", 30-32. That's my size. bam. I bought this pair of jeans and exactly the same pair of jeans at the same time, on the same day, at the same store. The other ones don't fit. Don't fit. They're like 3 inches too short. There's no reason on earth why that should be the case.
No.
This is an age of science and advancement. I mean, we should be past that. I know I've hijacked your whole thing and I made it about me
no,
again.
No, it's
but
fine. Yeah, it's a,
I'm just saying it
yeah.
frustrates me.
Yeah, and so now I have these pants that are like too long. And
no, but that's the
we were going to this thing on Saturday, and I bought them on Saturday, so I don't have any time to like hem them or anything. And my husband says, we could roll them up. And it's like,
you could peg them and then roll some smokes up in your sleeve.
Yeah, unless you're like a guy rocking some, you know, like rockabilly look or something. Rolled up jeans just look retarded.
Then we could go to the pool hall, baby, and then we could go hustling. All
I
right.
could put on my saddle shoes and go to the sock hop.
Mike Ness is here. He wants to take you down to the gym for a rumble. I think the thing with the pant legs, though, is that's how the kids wear them now. It's all with the... I can never tell.
But I am not a kid. I don't want to be stepping on the backs of my pants.
You just don't know how to live, Don. Here's my final thing about this. And then we got to do the True Blood thing. We got to get out of here because I just a little pigeon thing there. We got to get here. We have to get out of here because I heard Greg and Sarah in the kitchen. So, and it's amazing they made it in this early, by the way, because I saw how drunk they were by the end of Saturday, which was a fantastic time. My final observation is this. I never, and everybody who knows me knows that any fashion sense I have at this point is solely and strictly because of Sarah. That she managed to sort of like, I know Kung Fu enough of it into the back of my head that I was able to, you know, I was able to unplug the thing and go, I can match basic colors. Whoosh! And then I went to the Gap and I bought everything they had and now I'm set. But I never know when my jeans are too short. That's my thing. You know, if you're stepping on them, okay, they're probably too long. I can never tell now if jeans are too short. It's not like my socks are showing, like I got 3 inches of white or something down there. But I can never tell if the cuff of the jean is supposed to just almost be touching the ground or if it's just supposed to, like, break over the top of your shoe.
I think it's just supposed to break over the top of your
shoe. See, but no one knows. There ought to be an 800 number you can call where I can go, look, I'm a hapless male. There ought to be a store just called Hapless Male where you go and go, I got nothing, you know? Which I did it with, you know, you've seen those suits I wear for Outlook Portland.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I did? I don't mind saying it. It's not a plug. I went to, I mean, you know, whatever, but I went to, people can laugh. I went to the Men's Warehouse. I walked in. There was this hot girl there. Whose name I will not use on the air because that would be creepy. But I walked in. I said, look, you know how to dress. I don't. I got to be on TV. I got to wear some. I got to wear some clothes. I don't want to be laughed at. But I'm cheap. What do you got? And it was like filling out a bunch of variables on a website or something. And you click it and it goes, the perfect computer for you is a Dell 3590. And then she found something that worked, and so it was good. But that's what I need. A store called Hapless Male. All right. Well, on that note, kids.
All right.
I don't know if you all saw True Blood last night. I hope for your sake that you... I was going to say that you did, but then again, I really... You might never be the same. We're going to build up to the finale here in a second, so I'll give you... I'm not going to give any spoilers or anything, but... Here's my observations from last night's episode of True Blood, just in no random order. I was going to go through and pull the sound for these, but I don't really know what the point would be. It's going to be ill-delivered, and it's going to... Because the thing I found out about that guy who plays Bill Compton, what is his name? What is the name of that actor? Do you know?
Stephen Moyer.
It's like, we were making fun of him so bad the first season or two because, you know, I have tried forever to do a southern accent, and yet it eludes me. And I was just like, God, you suck, man. And then I found out that he's British or whatever. So his real voice is like, well, hello, I'm Stephen Moyer. I'm here to play the role of Bill Compton. And then I felt bad for a second. I'm like, oh, I'm making fun of him. But then I realized it has nothing to do with the accent. He just can't act.
No.
That's the thing. He just sucks as an actor. His thespfu is weak. So I'm watching True Blood last night, and I just made these notes to myself. This is kind of how I do it. I just keep a running tally. It's like flowing a debate tournament, you kids out there. They have now left the area of even double entendre. It is now just, it's like half an entendre at this point. There's the opening sequence where Eric is attacking and then sucking the blood from a werewolf. And so there's Eric Northhorse or whatever his name is, and he's all hot with the spiky hair, and he's all got the hollowed cheekbones and whatever, and you know he looks all perfect, and then he's covered in blood, which I think chicks probably find hot in some strange way for the same reason that guys do, in a way you can't really quantify, but which is true nonetheless. And as he is draining the blood from a werewolf all over the floor of Sucky's house, she's staring at him, and I swear to God, I almost feel like I ought to cue this up, but what would be the point? He actually looks up at her, and it's clearly, as all of the blood-related scenes are, it's an incredibly sexual moment. It's all like this big metaphor for, you know, the humping. And as she's looking at him with barely restrained lust, he looks up and he says, "I got your rug wet." And then they go to the opening credits. And I mean, it's like that's where you know, yeah, you realize exactly what that show is and what it isn't and exactly what they think of us, the audience. I think there were a couple bit of in-jokes last night as well. There was a moment where one of the characters says to another, I think Sookie is misidentifying where someone is from. She thinks he's from like Louisiana, and really he's from like Tennessee or whatever. But Eric actually says to her, "That's not, you know, a Tennessee accent. That's a Louisiana accent." He says, "Can't anybody here tell the difference between those two?" Which has got to be some sort of a response to the critical drubbing that this show has received because of the inability to do accents correctly. Let's see. Here's one moment that I actually did bring up. I brought up the audio for this. Let's see if I can find it. This is, all right. So this is the moment. Let's see.
"Don't y'all sleep in the ground."
All right. So this is the moment right after goddamn Tara, who bugs the hell out of me on a constant basis, has just had sex with this British, this sort of like undead Robert Downey Jr. guy, who I found really repellent.
He's
still safe with me, Patrol.
Yeah.
"What the hell just happened?"
Okay. Now listen to this moment. This is one of those things where I'm not quite sure that it's me. It may, in fact, just be the show itself or whatever, because you've got... Is there a train going by? No, I guess not. But she wakes up in bed with this British vampire, and she says something, and then he responds. And tell me what his answer is. She will ask what happened. What does he say in response?
"Oh, my God. What the hell just happened?"
"You lost yourself to the void."
I think he said, "You lost yourself to the void."
See, I heard "you lost yourself through the forehead," which, I mean, makes less sense. I guess yours actually is the more likely. Listen one
more
time.
At least I understood what it was, because the first time when I watched this morning, I didn't understand what he said at all, and I just went, "I don't care," and I just let it go.
Just let's listen one more time. See if you can hear "you lost yourself through the forehead."
"You lost yourself to the void."
Isn't that what it sounds like?
Yeah,
all
it
right.
does.
Let's see. Other horrible moments from last night. There's some sequence of, you know, where the sexing is happening, and then right after the sexing takes place, what do? They immediately in the diner cut to a shot of a piece of pie. Let's see. 19 minutes in, I make this note. And I, by the way, I called this last week. Have you noticed this? That on any television program ever, in any era, it doesn't matter what genre it is, when a woman vomits, she's always pregnant. That's it. The vomit never indicates, like, food poisoning or, you know, just had a touch too much vodka last night.
And if she starts coughing, she's going to die.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. You know, the little, that's consumption. And the, baby. Let's see. Great moment last night when Bill is, I don't even know whose voice I'm doing there.
Beale.
It's been Beale. Is Bill Compton is in a flashback sequence talking to his beloved wife from 1850 or whatever. And you know the whole thing where vampires cry and they cry blood. So he's crying over his dead kid, who his son had died of smallpox. So he's crying over the dead son. He turns around to look at his wife, who of course is not a vampire and doesn't know that he is. He is bleeding from the eyes. And then he says, "Don't be afraid." It was fantastic. It was like his delivery. It was the best. It was the best line reading ever. He has got blood gushing out of his face. His eyes are streaming blood. And he says, "Don't be afraid." Let's see. Final two things here. One of which is the big reveal. First of all, have I somehow missed a Jessica nude scene? Has she gotten nude and I've missed it?
I don't think so.
You know, and Jessica is the hot redheaded vampire that what's his name turned.
No, I think she's one of the few actresses that actually is allowed to keep a bra on.
She's
at
holding
all
it
times.
Out. She's waiting for the right offer.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I could be wrong. There's probably going to be all these people out there going, "Oh, I saw her."
Oh, no, somebody will know. I have to get Mr. Skin on the case, because he'll be able to tell me.
Oh,
and
yes.
You love Mr. Skin more than anything.
Oh yeah,
you are a huge fan of that guy.
Yeah, he makes me proud to be a human being.
All right.
He is everything that is awesome about humanity.
Through the forehead. Anyway, that Jessica girl, if she's nuded up at some point, you got to hook her brother up. Give me a hand there, because I gotta you know, because she's far and away the hottest girl on the show. I mean, there's just not even. Although the Tara girl, if she would, and I don't mean this in I don't mean this in the pig male way that it sounds. If she just shut up, if she would just not talk. If she would not talk and take off her clothes, it'd be fantastic. Now I sound like that cop in Trading Places.
I have been enjoying the whole getting rid of the dead body storyline.
Yeah.
The whole, I'm a brand new vampire and I killed a guy. Now what? That's a great idea.
And the great thing about her is that through Jessica, they do what I find is the most interesting aspect of the show. And we're way over time. We've got to wrap this up here in a second. I'm sorry, everybody. But which is they address the mechanics of being a vampire.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because there's that whole thing where they don't just have to sleep when it's light. They actually have to sleep in the ground. And if they're not underground, they become nauseous. Because that first time she, like, woke up in the middle of the day, even though she was inside and she was, you know, throwing up or whatever. And he's like, no, you must sleep in the ground. It nourishes your life force. You don't want my life. Or whatever. anyway. So if Jessica's gotten nude at some point, you gotta let me know about that. So finally, and this is a little bit of a spoiler. So just, you know, you tune in for like 30 seconds, you want to hear this. Last night, it ends with Bill Compton and his ex-girlfriend, Lorena, who is the one, I think, who made him back in like 1812 or whatever. There's no way to explain this. They're humping it out on the bed.
Well, they're having an argument.
They're having an argument, which of course turns to the sexing.
Yeah.
You know, I will never make love to you.
Very abruptly. I hate you. I will never love you. Hump, hump, hump.
He doesn't just say that. He says, I will never make love to you.
And then he said, I will never love you.
I think, no, you're thinking of every other time he's ever, you know.
Maybe.
I have spent decades trying to love you. But he actually says at one point something, I will never love you. And then he's on the bed ripping off her clothing. And then they're having sex, which, as you noted, is odd because his pants are still on.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to actually remove his pants. So I'm thinking, much like Spike and Buffy, he just burst through, you know, his zipper somehow with his magical vampire penis.
And so I apologize if this sounds like I'm about to work blue. There's no other way to describe this. So Bill is on top of Lorena. It's like a vampire sex story problem. They're having sex. He's biting her, and you know, because they, you know, it's like it's the grudge effing, as my friend Brandon used to say. So it's the hate sex. And he's grabbing her, and you think he's going to bite her neck, but instead, and again, it's like missionary position. Like, she's on her back. He's on top. He grabs her head. He turns her head and twists it all the way around. So it's still missionary position, her on her back, but her head is now totally turned around and is looking down at the floor off the side of the bed. And yet she's continuing to talk, and then they cut to the wide shot of him throwing a hump into her, and it's like boobs on top. But face on the other side, because her head is, and then she starts talking, and she's like, Bill, I still love you, and she's telling him how much she loves him. Meanwhile, she's bleeding from the mouth. Her head is turned around sideways, looking at the floor. He's up on top, going like, and giving it to her, and then he pulls up and he does the whole con sort of shot, except he just kind of screams and grabs his hair, and so there's this extended Beetlejuice-esque sequence where he is having sex with his girlfriend, who is still alive, while her head has been actually turned around 180 degrees and is talking to him while pointing at the floor. And believe me when I say that, as insane as I'm making it sound, I am not doing it justice. It's like so much nuttier than I am even indicating right now. I mean, there's no way to explain it. So there you go. So that's that. And this is all true. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We're going to clear on out of here. Don't forget that you can give a gift subscription to this very fine radio program. Just go to rickemerson.com/gift. And it is also now listenable on the mobile device of your choice. You just go to facebook.com/rickemerson or blog.rickemerson.com to find out more about it. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Christy Turnquist from The Oregonian will join us tomorrow. And I never got to this thing about my Leverage audition, where I did the worst accent in the history of the world. And I think the first episode, I've auditioned for Leverage twice, the first episode has actually aired, so I think I can now with impunity read the script, the sides, as they say.
Well, we will discuss this tomorrow.
Yes, we will. Greg Nibbler and Sarah Dillon are going to come on in here and record Fun Employment Radio, which will be up later on today at funemploymentradio.com. In the meantime, in between time, you want to get a hold of us, you can do it. It's Rick at rickemerson.com or Don at rickemerson.com. LegionofNews.com. Thank you so much for joining us. And as always, you can hear us on Legion of News tomorrow at noon at PDX.FM. And this show will be up in the archive about 30 minutes from now. So be listening. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. The Rick Emerson Show made possible today and every day by a grant from you. Our chief engineer is Thomas the Tech Man Gill. And, of course, our chief of staff, Cheryl Kenna-Cohen. Thank you for listening. It is Monday, June 28th, 2010. And that is The Frequency, Kenneth. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.